Welcome inside the Legends Lounge, where baseball VIPs are hanging out and talking about their life in the game.
Hey, this one's special. Oh, my family, most of them at least, growing up Mets fans, huge Milky Wilson fans, full of personality, part of the best moments in franchise history. And even after the game, you learn a lot from him. I mean, he was a trucker for years. I mean, what? Yeah, you're like, Mookie Wilson was a trucker. He loves it.
Yeah,
it's like for some people, it's a hobby almost too, as much of as it was a job where it's, say, I'm going to go paint. I'm going to go whatever, hang out on the beach. For him, it's like, I'm going to go cruise across the country as a trucker.
Yeah. You know, and I've told you the stories of me coming over from Cuba and growing up mostly in Miami, but having so many family members in Manhattan. And so coming over every, you know, every week, for a couple of weeks every summer. And you know that I was a Yankee fan out of the womb, but I love going to Met games too. So I can kind of relate with you as far as the lore that Mookie Wilson, when you say the name Mookie Wilson, I don't even think you have to say Wilson. If you just say Mookie to anybody that's a Met fan in the United States of America, especially in New York, Queens, you know, in those boroughs that love him, you not only just the play, and we look forward to, you know, to hearing and talking about the infamous Billy Buckner play in Game 6, but everything else that he did, Scotty, and he represents, you know, he was just a solid blue-collar worker. And I'm looking forward to hearing his story and how well he is represented, being, you know, he played for other teams, obviously. We're going to talk about that, Toronto and a couple others. But there's no doubt that there's a soft spot in the Mets lore for Mookie Wilson.
Let's bring him in to the lounge. Twelve-year big leaguer stepping into the lounge, part of that flashy, tough, gritty 1986 World Series champion Mets club. He hit that ball that went through Buckner's legs. You might have heard of it or seen it. He was also inducted into the Mets Hall of Fame in 1996, career 274 hitter, over 300 stolen bags. And he's super active in the business world, which we'll get into. You know, we love talking about that here. Mookie Wilson stepping into the lounge. Great to see you. How's life, my friend?
Man, it's good to see you guys, and life is good. I mean, no Amen. One's as good as I do.
That's awesome, Mook.
It's scary because you know it's got to end at some point, but it's just unbelievable. Great life,
When it does end, then you know, hopefully, you will be called to glory, and it'll be even better. It's the other game that we're waiting for. So this is great to see your face, you know. You're kind of a living legend. This is the Legends Lounge, but definitely in the lore of New York sports, you're one of those, stalwart names and players and athletes. So, you know that, and I know you feel that you've been blessed for that, but thank you for coming on. And right off the bat, man, I want to start with back in the day, man. You're in South Carolina. I'm assuming you're in your Gamecockville over there in Columbia.
Yeah, I'm in South Carolina, Columbia. I'm in a little town right about, I'd say 15 miles from the campus, actually.
Right.
I'm just trying to stay out of people's way, you know, but it's been really, really good.
But listen, man, I do want to go and go back to the beginning of the roots of South Carolina and you, you know, the early days and growing up in that, you know, in your beloved area of yours of South Carolina. And tell us a little bit about, you know, Mookie Wilson back in the day.
Well, you know, it's when I start telling people about the area and the time, the era that I grew up in, they look at me like I've lost my mind, like some foreign language or anything. And see, I came up, I'm 67 years old, all right? And I was right in the middle of the civil rights movement and all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. man, you know. I was right in the middle when people wasn't allowing us to go into hotels, restaurants, and all that kind of stuff. And when I start telling my nieces and nephews and people in general about it, they look at me like, no way, that came. I'm saying we're talking 70s here now. We're talking early mid 70s, and this is the kind of stuff I grew up in, and it was a time of chaos. It really was. It was a lot of chaos, a lot of mistrust, and you know, you it was all about survival. It was all about survival. Then I got in baseball, and then I thought things would be different, and it was to a degree, but then that ugly head started raising and coming up, you know, you start understanding. See, I was at the University of South Carolina. I was the first African-American to play baseball at the University of South Carolina, the very first, you know.
Wow, and I did not know that.
Yes, I was the very first. So, and now we're talking, you know, 76, 77, man.
In the South.
In the South, you know. I would go to ballparks, and I'll be the only dark-skinned person in the whole stadium, you know. And some of the language, I've been called everything but Mookie. Okay.
And that's a curious name, but you were called some other curious names.
I was just called some really other things. And, and I survived. I had great teammates who was just, you know, Ed Lynch, by the way, Randy Marks. You know Randy Marks, you know those
yes.
guys. I had good teammates, man, and they were very supportive. I had a coach, Joan Raines, who was an old catcher for the Phillies years back. And many times he wanted to take me out of ball games because it got kind of rough, you know. Right. But I never came out of a ball game. That's a whole new story. But this is how...
Did you say, I apologize, did you say Ed Lynch?
Ed Lynch was a teammate of mine.
Yeah, Ed Lynch went to my high school.
Oh,
Miami
okay.
Columbus High.
All
yeah.
right. All right.
Ed Lynch is one of our gloried players in that high school, man. And I thought you said Ed Lynch because I know what a good human being that man is.
Yeah.
And, I'm not surprised he supported you.
Yeah, he went to Carolina on basketball.
Yes.
And he ended up playing baseball.
Exactly. He was like a big 6'6" pitcher.
Yeah.
And he went on a basketball scholarship, but obviously he could pitch a little bit because he was pretty damn good.
He could pitch a little bit, but that's all that he's slow as molasses. He can't move at all. But anyway.
I'll be sure to tell him that when I see him in an alumni thing.
Yeah, but I was just with him a couple weeks ago, so he knows
it. Oh, my God. That is
awesome.
Dear
friend. A dear friend. But anyway, I came up through that and being drafted. It was odd because I was raised in a family of 12. Seven boys. I defeated every statistic made. I was made large family in the South and Black. And I made it in New York. Mm. And that's a long story short. And so, man, I've been blessed. I've had people, I've been associated with people who were caring people. And they really helped me through all the trials and difficulties I'm going through. And I can't say enough about my father, who came up when it really was tough. He's supporting a family of 12 on $25 a week. Go figure that, huh?
Wow.
You can't buy a pair of shoes down for $25, you know. But I learned a lot, and baseball actually helped me a lot because I got to be with a lot of people, different cultures. My dear friends, and I bring this up because my dear friends, I don't know if you remember gentleman Paco Perez, you know, from Puerto Rico.
No.
The best man at my wedding.
Okay. Played with the Mets?
Yeah, he was the Mets Miley system. Never made it to the big leagues.
Okay. No, but I did not know him.
Well, you know this guy, Junior Ortiz. I know you know Junior Ortiz.
Oh, yeah. Junior Ortiz. I played with Junior. I played with Junior with the Pirates.
Yeah, and I'm sure you remember Oquindo.
Yes. Jose is a phenomenal human being.
Phenomenal human being. Godparents to my kids and the way the godparents to his kids. So I've met some really, really good, really, really
Before
good
we move people. On that, I want to ask you, because, you know, I'm a little younger than you, but, you know, I definitely, you know, you were already kind of getting already done and set up by the time that I was signing.
Yeah.
But having signed with the Yankees and getting the big league camp early on as a, you know, 19, 20 year old, just kind of tasting it. I would imagine in that era, which there was a lot more Black players then, by the way,
mm-hmm.
that later on migrated into heavier into football. They were always into basketball then, but not as much into football. And then they went to football. But was how were your relationship like with the crosstown with Willie Randolph, you know, Willow and Dave Winfield and the black players on the Yankee teams? Because, you know, they had some prominent black players too. Did you guys cross paths a little bit? There wasn't a Subway Series, obviously, interleague, but was there any interaction between the black players on either team?
The only time that we actually associated was they had what they called back then the Mayor Trophy game in New York. You remember that game?
Yep.
And we see him in spring training on occasion. We got to actually interact during the off season when we started doing benefits and the functions and stuff of that nature. Willie Randolph and I became really, really good friends over the years.
A good man.
So, you know, you meet those people, Roy White and all the guy, you know. So, we didn't actually, you know, interact a lot during the season, but during the off season, we got to see each other quite a bit.
I want to take you back for a moment, Mookie, back to the South Carolina conversation, just because I'm going through the bio. I just want to make sure that I don't miss a great story. You signed to play at South Carolina State, and then they were like, we're turning the lights off, Mookie, so you got to go somewhere else. How was that experience?
I tell you, when you're in South Carolina and you're a young African-American, going to South Carolina State was like, that was it, man. We go in to see the booth. Hey, we go to South Carolina State. All we don't want to say state. We go into state, man. Everybody wanted to go to state. And I had two cousins that played baseball at South Carolina State. And when they offered me a scholarship to play baseball at South Carolina State, that's right around the corner from home, man. I was like, I was in heaven, man. And then the bottom fell out, man. They thought we got to drop.
What happened?
Well, they came up with that. What's it? Title IX?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they had to drop some sports in order to accommodate, the other sport that.
The funding and all that.
Sports.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they dropped baseball. And I say, man, but the funny thing about it, they were still going to honor the scholarship. They still were going to let me go to school, but I wouldn't go to school for a company of baseball. What good was that? That was fun in that. So,
you jumped over the Gamecocks.
You know, so people say, well, it's all about the education. Don't let anybody fool you, man. It ain't about the education.
That's why it's a student athlete. You want to be a student athlete. Not just a student.
No. Well, I think with me, it was an athlete student. An athlete first. All right.
Hey, you're not the first one to say
dog.
Especially nowadays. It's like, talk. Let's just say what it is. You know?
That's true.
But anyway, when they dropped the baseball program, I was kind of left out in the cold, and I had a dear friend whose name, he was the judge, the Supreme Court judge of South Carolina. And he was Judge Julius B. Ness.
That sounds like the South right there.
Julius B. Ness. And he was a good friend. I played Legion ball with his son. And he actually drove me to Spartanburg Junior College to enroll. And as a matter of fact, I met him. He told me to come to his office, which is courthouse. So I went and having court. And when I walked in, he told me to come and sit by him on the bench. So I went up there. And he adjourned court and we jumped in his car. It's a Thunderbird, man. A big old Thunderbird. Never been in one in my life. It was a big old Thunderbird. And we drove to Spartanburg and I enrolled right then and there. And he helped me get, the grants and stuff that I need to go to school. Because Spartanburg Junior College, they don't have scholarships, by the way. And I went to Spartanburg Junior College. It cost me absolutely nothing. I give him a lot of credit for that. But anyway, and that's my baseball career really, really, really started, in that moment. I mean, I was a good high school player, good Legion player, but there were no, let's say they don't knock down your doors, after American ball players to go to scholarships in big schools, that just don't happen. As a matter of fact, he went to the coach of South Carolina and asked the coach to come watch me play. And the coach say he couldn't use me. Wasn't good enough.
Oh my.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, this coach of how it works out 2 years later, after my junior college year, and the coach left, guess who gave me a scholarship? University of South Carolina.
Thank goodness. So, that's when Bobby Richardson was over there, and
yeah, Bobby was gone. Yeah, Bobby left.
Bobby left, and then
I didn't play under Bobby Richardson. Nope.
Oh, you didn't play under Bobby Richardson. You played in the next tenure. Good. Yeah. I mean, finally somebody saw the talent for what it was, not the skin color, but the talent. Speaking of talent, you were always, I'm assuming, fast and speedy. Were there other sports that you played too? I mean, did you do track and field? Did you play any, you know, football, basketball?
Let me stop you about track and field. I hate running, okay? I ain't running.
Okay. Timeout. I'm going to call 20 second timeout on you right now. Hold on a second.
Seriously.
As running fast as you were?
Yeah, running was not something I enjoyed doing.
Okay. That is news.
I've never run a mile in my life. To this day, I have not run a mile, and I will not run a mile. I figured the first I had to run was 90 feet, you know, so I...
a couple left turns, and that's about it.
You know, I just think that running was... It was just kind of productive for what I wanted to do, you know. I was asked to run track. I was asked to play basketball. I was asked to play football, begged to play football.
I bet.
But those sports didn't give me any joy. I just didn't enjoy playing those sports. I mean, I just, you know, I'm just being honest. I did not run anybody in the field, so it wasn't no fun in that. There was no challenge in it.
That's funny, Scotty.
That is really good.
He's like just saying, I can outrun everybody. I don't even need to bother with it. I'm just gonna. I'm gonna hit
the right sport for it. Then, yeah. You know? Let me give you a short burst all day. But
yeah. Oh man, I do that all day long. You know, but baseball was a challenge to me. It was a challenge because one on one, no matter what you do, you know, once you play, but you know how it is, man. You out there by yourself, man. No one can help you do anything. Right. You know, and it's more of a thinking man's game than people give you credit for.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And the one-on-one, you know, almost tennis match of a serve and volley type situation between hitter and pitcher.
You know it, man. It was
dramatic, man. Dramatic. Yeah. If you didn't appreciate that, then you didn't belong in a baseball field because there was a lot of math, science, physicality, and thinking to it, you know? I mean, Mookie, real quick. I mean, just stepping out, people don't realize if you could take us through an at bat, you know, like just what's going on in your head in between every pitch.
I
don't think people realize the nuance and the beauty of that chess game.
And I'll tell you, just jumping ahead, you know, I love playing baseball. I love the offensive part of it. But man, you talking about getting the juice of fluid. I love running the bases, man.
Yeah.
Because I could put on a show.
Right.
Put on a show, man. Now, that was my thrill. If baseball was the point where I could have been the designated base runner, I would have taken a job.
Right.
I would have taken a job in a heartbeat because I really enjoyed that part. I didn't work on my hitting. I should have been a better hitter.
You're a damn good hitter, man.
You said it, what, 275? You know,
I could have been a lot better. I could have been a lot better.
And a switch hitter, too.
I didn't take it as serious as I did base running. Mm. I really didn't.
Well, you mastered that, I'll tell you. And it also converted to your coaching days, which I wanted to ask you about because my family was big Mets fans. And, you know, everyone loved hearing when they would announce the coaches at the beginning of the year, obviously given the history with the team. But you're talking a lot about, you know, people that helped you get to where you are. Did you really embrace and love the coaching game because you were coach for a long time, you know, and a lot with the Mets, of course. So did you embrace and really love that part of it to give back, and what was your style?
Initially, I didn't think that I would. I didn't think that I would ever coach because I saw some of the coaching is hard, and I couldn't see myself doing that. But once I have Nevitation and Joe McLevain got me. The coach. I don't know if you guys remember Joe McLevain.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, he stopped me going up the stairway in Shea Stadium one day and said, I want you to coach. I want you on the baseball field because I was doing a little PR work for the Mets. And he stopped me in the stairway, walking up the stairs. And he said, I want you to coach. I said, well, I have a job. He said, well, we pay you for both of them, coaching and doing the PR.
Right.
I said, okay, well, cool. I can turn down the money at the time. Come on. You know, I wasn't turning that down. But anyway, And that what got me started. And once I got into it, I never thought I would enjoy coaching as much as I did, watching kids get better from year to year, sometimes from week to week, you know, simple things. And to listen to kids talk baseball who knows absolutely nothing. And when I say nothing, they rely mainly on their physical abilities. And you know, physical ability only gets you so far. They get you in the door.
Correct.
But they ain't gonna get you to the top, you know. You know, and I was able to talk with kids. You know, I wasn't a hitting coach, but I talked to kids about hitting. I talked to kids mainly about the playing the outfield and about base running. And as a matter of fact, one of the main things I tell kids about outfield play, I say, listen, don't look to make that ESPN super play. That just happens by itself. What you are, you damage control. When a man hits ball to you, the pitcher made a mistake. He didn't want that to be done. So it's now your job is to limit the damage. And, you know, and I refuse to have kids die for baseball. No player I ever coached died for baseball while I was coaching. I don't want you diving for baseball. You know, stay on your feet, you know.
You kept a lot of guys healthy then without anyone even knowing it. You know what I'm saying?
I can honestly say I did not lose a kid diving for balls. I did not lose a kid with a bad arm because I understood the throwing part of it and how I was injured. Just overthrowing, throwing too much, too much and improperly. You know, and you have to be able to tell kids what they do and how it's done. And I had proof. I mean, right up to my coaching days, I was able to take infield with them. So they appreciated that.
And you know, it's interesting to say about the diving. And I know what you're saying, and beyond the injury part and knowing you, like I know you also, it's positioning. So if you position yourself properly, then, and you've learned and you're reading the hitter and your own pitcher and how the defense is playing, then you should be in the right spot that most of the plays do not warrant diving. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah. Well, what it is that you have to read hitters, know who your pitcher is, and have an idea what this pitcher like to do it, what counts. That's what it is. That's what it's all about. I know this man right here. I know he wants to get guys out with a certain pitch. Okay, I'm going to play that pitch. Now, if he misses a spot, that's his bad.
Right. Blooper or something.
Yeah,
you can't control that. Hey, I want to stay on this base running before we move, and Scotty maybe takes you on a yellow brick road into that great 1986. But, you know, you hit on a couple of things that I definitely wanted to ask you, because you were such a great base running coach, and not just base stealing, because you were a phenomenal base stealer. So I'm sure you had a lot of young kids that you worked with, including Vince back in the day. Probably you had Vince Coleman when he was with the Mets and a number of other guys. What is going on? Well, how do you see the game now? I mean, base running, stealing has definitely been dumbed down, but more importantly, how do you see base running on a whole?
Base running right now is probably at the poorest level you've ever seen, ever in baseball and in my lifetime in the game. There's more station to station ball right now. Good base running creates offense, and I don't think that they think that all once you hit a baseball, they think that well, I got my hit. That's it. No. Your offense just starts once you get on base. And I don't think that people look at it that way. Good base runners want to make the next guy's job better, easier. My job was to make the guy behind me job easier. That was my job. Right. My job was not just to get on first base. That's why, I argue with people. They say, well, this guy is a great leadoff hitter because he got a 400 on base percentage year, but he dies on first base. So big deal. Big deal. You know, I want someone who's going to get me to the next base without that base hit or wild pitch or whatever. You got to be able to take the extra base. Even if you don't steal the bases, reading balls to the outfield, taking the extra base, understanding pitchers, and if you are a base stealer, you know, it's just something that they don't do. Now, I will say this. Base running right now, poor base running is a product of the environment of baseball right now. Right. Now, that's the product of it, because that is not, there's no value in it anymore. There's no value. The value now is launch angle, bad speed, exit velocity. This is where the value is now. It's not in the base running part of it. So guys are saying, you know, hey, why should I risk being injured when I'm not, it's not going to add to my value as a ball player? And it really don't. Mm. They don't go and find guys like me anymore. How many guys in the game right now you can say are base burners or runners?
Very few. I mean, we had one on our show recently in D. Gordon.
Yeah.
And
yes,
Scotty B. I mean, you know, hit me, because I mean, I know you're doing a lot of
obviously
games.
Trey Turner. You
Trey
know,
Turner unleashed. Is legit. Is legit.
Here's my thing. Okay, yeah. More so than, because we get into this obviously with the former players sometimes, yeah. on the you yeah. know what's being valued, but my yeah. where I think there's actually the difference, Mookie, in the base running is that I notice a lot of players who come up to the league and they might be a little yeah. more aggressive when they start. And that includes how they play in the outfield too. And then it kind of calms down a little, yeah. whether they got hurt or they're approaching free agency. So I do think, right. And they get older then eventually. Right. Like, I think the cycle is strange, where I think there's just as much talented players just from observing the game. Hey, how did this guy get hurt? Oh, he got hurt running the bases. Right. So if I'm going to get paid, obviously, yeah, there's a conversation to be had about your hitting profile, but I do think that there is trepidation, right, with players
yeah.
once they either, you know, are approaching a free agent mark or they've gotten hurt a lot. Like, there are guys that you, I mean, you, because yes, we're not seeing 60, 70, 80 bags regularly or anything, but even like there's guys I think of, like George Springer, right? And then he's dealt yeah. with a lot of injuries.
Yeah.
Like, I bet, and Mike Trout, if I look at their
Mike Trout, the epitome. Numbers, yeah.
Those guys, those both of those guys could steal a bag left and right. Altuve. Like, I'll do it while we're talking yeah. here. I'll look at those three, for example, and I bet you mm-hmm. that none of those guys stole, you know, much in the last few years versus their first few years.
Well, they
and
shut
like those guys
down.
Are slow. They're still fast.
They yeah. literally
they just
shut
don't
down.
Make it part of their game because they're so valuable on the field. I'm not saying it's the right thing. It's just you do get hurt running bases, right? More than you would if you don't try and steal a bag. Like, all it takes is one guy stepping up on your hand to ruin your yeah. season.
But that's true. But that's, like I said, the base running right now, the status of base running is a product of
right.
the environment of baseball right, right now. And you say yep. the guy say, hey, I'm not going to, I don't get paid to bases. I might get hurt. Okay. So I'm not going to even try anymore. And you got guys who, look, I've been coaching minor leagues, okay? I've been in player development. As to where they talk about base running a little bit, it's hard to find them actually practicing base running. It's right. hard. They're actually practicing base running. They just don't put that time in. And when I was coaching and I was the base running coordinator, I asked them, you know, we got a lot more than one day to talk about base running. They had a lot one day, so you go around the base to talk about what you do on first base, what you do on second base, what you do on third base. We do it one day.
Right.
Let's talk about it. One day.
Yeah.
One day. Now, the guys that you named, those are exceptional ball players. They do a little bit of everything. They could do other things without sticking on the base. But every ball player in an Altuve, you know, when base running is your thing,
yeah.
you have to do it. You can't worry about I might get injured. But, and I'm saying you name guys who do other things that are more valuable than them stealing the base. Of course.
Well, I mean, just first to third, man. We're not even seeing first to third.
That's what I'm talking about. First to third. It's not about stealing the base. It's about taking that extra base, you know, and that stuff. You're just not going to see. You just don't see it. You just don't see it, you know.
It's funny you say. It's funny you say that, like, you know, like your one day and stuff. Because base running to me now has gone by the way of, like, PFP. You know what I mean? In the spring training, the pitchers practice, you know, no. double plays and covering the bag and stuff. And then they really don't practice anymore. Then you get into, like, July, and you're wondering why pitchers are making dramatic errors when the ball is hit back to them or it's bunted in front of them. Because they're not practicing, you know, the fundamentals as much as we used to. Because we used to do infield and outfield, man.
Yeah.
We used to do infield, outfield.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes Scotty, I mean, even at the big league level, sometimes in between a homestand, we'd have pitchers taking ground balls in front of the, you know, at the major league level, taking grounders for a minute or two. I'm not seeing that. I mean, that's not. No. And then you're expecting them to make the play in October in the pressure of a postseason. Talk to me on that one, Scotty B.
Well, the one thing he mentioned, and he said about players getting injured.
That's true, though. I get that.
And you know, you can get injured, but you know something? Have you been watching guys slide recently?
It's not good.
They're not all as smooth as Trey Turner, I'll tell you that.
They don't know how.
Yeah. You know, no, Trey Turner's known for his smooth slides. You've seen Trey Turner's slides.
Trey Turner's a hell of an athlete.
Yeah, some of the guys, you know, ready, but you look at, and I'm buying, don't get me wrong, I'm by no means the model for sliding and running and all that kind of stuff. I enjoy doing it. But I played for 12 years, and I got injured. But never did I get injured sliding. Never I got injured running the bases. No, they twist angle because they don't know how to hit the bag. They don't know how to position their bodies in position to make cuts. They don't know how to do it. They slide when they're 2 feet from the bag to break ankles, pull groins.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, you're going to get injured when you don't know what to do because, now, the rest of you know, you used to have sliding practice in spring training.
Yes.
Put in a pit down in the slide.
Yep.
Yeah. You learn how to slide.
No, yeah. But I get it. I mean, there is, listen, if you want to, and to move on from this, in the end of all, and I think both of you guys will laugh, you know the phrase, follow the money? You got to follow the money. And the money, that's what Scotty was basically saying. The money in protecting yourself a little bit. Now, I'm not saying they're not running the bases. They're running, but
they're running the bases.
Yeah, they run hard. They play hard. These kids are playing hard, running hard, trying hard. It's just a different game. And then when you're not fundamentally practicing something regular, now you want to ask how they, you know, turn the double play or, you know, some of the plays. I want to ask you about that.
Yeah.
Some of the running catches in the outfield, the athleticism we're seeing in today's player is dramatic.
Oh, they're great athletes. Incredible. And I meant to mention that with Scotty, the athletes are outstanding. Don't get me wrong. The day's athlete is comparable or better than athletes in a whole, during our days of play.
And we had some good ones back then, but they're some monster. These kids are really athletic.
I mean, Mike Trout is not human. No human being should be that big and that fast, But so that's not the issue. The issue is that, and I'm gonna use this term because I've been hearing it so much now in basketball, baseball IQ.
Right.
This is what is missing. It didn't have nothing to do with the talent. And one thing I will say that this, and we can move on to something else. Ball players, no matter who they are, will do what you demand of them to do because they want to be successful. They will do it. And they will find a way to make it. So if you don't stress one thing, they're going to say, well, I don't have to do that because that's not what I've been asked to do.
Right.
Plain and simple. They say, well, why can't he hit the ball the other way? Nobody asked him to hit the ball the other way.
Right.
Why can't he bunt? Nobody asked me to bunt. You know?
Sure. Nobody was shooting three-pointers back in the day, right? And now they're all shooting three-pointers.
They would do what you ask, or they will give the best effort they can. So, but that being said, I tell people, forget about last year, last week, 10 decades ago. Enjoy the game for what it is now. And that's what I do. That's what I do.
I got to clean up, too, so I don't get crushed on social media. I brought one good example up, but the other two weren't great. George Springer had a career high. Or no, second best in his career, 14 stolen bags this past season. And Altuve picked it up again, too. He had some low years, like 2019, 6, 2022,
he was hurt.
2021, 5. And then he stole 18 bags.
Yeah.
He's not his 30 George Springer's plus.
Weird because George hasn't really stolen that many bases, but he does run hard, and he's a heck of a interesting power-hitting leadoff guy.
And
he is.
And a phenomenal outfielder.
But yes, the thing about Altuve, stolen bases,
Yeah.
The thing about stolen bases is it's not about how fast the guy is. It's about being able to read the pitcher. Sure. Because if you read the pitcher very well, you can steal a lot more bases. But if you're waiting for that on 3-1 count where everybody will go, come on, you know, a 3-0 count, come on. That's not reading. You know, when you're able to read pitchers and you have a step before he releases the ball, that's the key.
I want to ask you, and then we'll go into to that World Series year. Who was the best catcher that gave you the most fits behind the plate when you were trying to steal a bag?
Man, you know something? There is no catcher that shut me down. Okay. There ain't no catcher.
My
last year. My last year when I was in Toronto, the guy that impressed me the most, and I probably lost a step or two by this, so I'm not giving him all the credit. Okay, I'm not doing.
I love it.
Okay, but Pudge.
Okay, Texas when he was in Texas.
I had this awesome jump. I read the picture perfect, and I was into my slide, man. Before I got into my slide, the ball was looking me in the face, man. I would say, how in the world did he get the ball done? And I just began to watch him, you know, but that was it. But I had this little competition with Tony Pena.
I was gonna say Tony Pena, man. I swear to God, he was a dear friend.
Right. And we had this little competition, man. I said, man, you're never gonna throw me out, you're never gonna throw me out. And I did play this little game, and I think that's the one guy that I probably respect him more in that regard. And I tease him right now. I told his son the other matter of fact about a month ago, you know, your dad never threw me out, you know. You know that, right?
He probably doesn't own up to it. He probably says, No, I got him. He's in the book. Yeah. we ball players been known to lie like a you know what.
Hey.
No, but I don't think he probably. Hey, if you say he didn't get you, he didn't get you.
All right, okay.
So here's what I want to do. So, you know, on about 5 minutes left here, I want to do two things. O is going to take over on his big question and can tie in some 86 Mets there. One more bridge I want to do to get there.
Okay.
Yeah. Is because this is what makes what we do unique. Mookie Wilson's done a lot of things since besides the playing and the coaching. You know, you came out with an album. You've got, and I've heard you talk about it. You're crushing it in the catering business. So for the former players out there, you're an entrepreneur. You've done what you wanted to do. That's why you said at the top here, and we're coming full circle, you're loving life. So just I want to get a couple minutes quick from you on everything that you've got going on. What are you doing, and how did you get to all of that now?
Okay. First and foremost, I'm going to go forget about this. I'm a granddad, okay? And you know how you get to be a granddad, right? We don't have to go through all that, all right?
That's a different podcast.
Okay, all right, that's enough of that. Okay, I'm an ordained minister. I've been a minister now for the better part of 10 years. Baptist down here in South Carolina. I've done a lot of churches in New York area, in Texas. I'm an ordained minister. I've written a bestseller book, and I love writing. Matter of fact, I have two on hold right now that I'm waiting to get published. Now that we've had the pandemic and all that kind of stuff, I'm trying to wait to get all that going. I am a certified truck driver. I've been driving trucks since 1998. So I'm a professional truck driver. I have my own trucking business. You know, love it. Second best job I've had in baseball is driving my truck. Love it. Love it. I mean, it's absolute. But I don't drive now. I'm done with the driving since I got all these grandkids and everything else I'm doing. But I've driven for, like I say, since like 96, I've been driving truck. And my latest thing right now is that I've opened, we started a catering business with my brothers. And that's what we're doing right now, because all of us are pretty much semi-retired and we got to find things to do ourselves. And this is what we spend a lot of time doing. So it's been great.
LegacyCatering.net.
LegacyCatering.net. That's it.
That's beautiful, man. Wow. I mean, everything, Scotty, was like, okay, wow, cool this, cool that.
trucking. I mean, the only other guy that I know in the trucking business was the mailman, Karl Malone. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you're talking rigs. You're talking a rig. Oh, yes. Like a truck.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had
state to state.
I owned a couple of trucks. Big ones. Had a condos, had two beds in it, and fully equipped. Yeah.
I ain't driving that, man. First of all, you gotta learn how to drive that. That's not driving a Ford 350 dually. This is a truck, man.
Yeah,
this is legit. I'll take a dually. I'll have fun with that. Yeah. But I ain't driving. I've passed it. It's
so peaceful. I'd go from South Carolina to Texas. I've been out to California a couple of times.
Listen to music. Listen to stuff.
Just listen to music. And if a ball game's on, I'll throw a ball game on.
No way, man.
Yeah,
that's Americana, bro. That's Americana at its best.
I love that.
The road. Getting on the road.
I'm telling you, man. I have a lot of respect for truckers. And for those people that think the truckers have a hard life, no, they don't. Trust me.
Eastbound and down, loaded up and trucking, baby.
Yeah.
Like Smokey the Bandit. Brother, I got to ask you about 1986. Yeah. You know, mainly because, again, that's my sweet spot. You know what I mean? I was just getting up to the big leagues right around then for myself. And you know, so there's a lot of contemporary guys, including yourself there. But that 86 team was such an eclectic, diverse weird, ooh, if you want, team, you know what I mean?
No, with good. Led by Davey Johnson, good adjective, yes.
But you had a young Doc, a young Straw, you had, you know, the kid who you know, I got to know later on as that was a Marlin, and he was a broadcaster, and of course, the great Gary Carter, you know, all the way to Keith Hernandez, Ray White. I want to say Jesse Orozco was on that team.
Yeah, Jesse was on that team.
Jesse, who pitched for every team known to man, in the history of baseball, probably that lefty seemed like pitch for everybody. Yeah. Then you had the scholar and Ron Darling, Mr. Stanford. Yeah. You had, and then one of my homies of all homies, and people don't realize that he was on that team, and from San Diego, California, the great Kevin Mitchell.
Kevin Mitchell, a crazy man.
You know, so that was an eclectic team, bro. You got to just tell me your thoughts and what a great what a culmination of a World Series that was.
Well, first of all, let me say it was a great team. I won't say a good team. It was a great team, and I tell people, if you want to just say talent wise for 25 man roster, some teams may have had better talent 25. Okay, but man, I tell you what, we had some core players there, man. I'd go to war with any day of the week, man. Any day of the week. You know, Coach, you knew we had Doc and we had Straw. I mean, these guys, they were everything you wanted to see in a young athlete. They had the side, they had the look, man, they had the swagger, they had everything, you know. We had the intellect on the team because we had the Ron Darlings, you know, and stuff like that. And Keith Hernandez. Now, Keith, I don't know if you had time to talk with Keith. Oh, he's a history buff, by the way.
Mm, really?
He was the brains of the operation on the field. You know, he's one of the smartest players I've ever been around that taught the game with. He was really, really smart. Really, when we got Keith, I think that put us over the hump, you know, when we got Keith. And everything else just kind of fell in line. We had a bunch of craziness down. Now we got these players. Now we're going to have somebody to manage these players. But David Johnson, a little bit of a wild man himself. Okay?
Yes, I know David.
Okay. Yeah. David is, and I know you hear this term a lot, and it's why he is a player's manager. You hear that all the time.
Right.
Well, David was literally a player's manager. David stayed out of the way. You know, he let players play. Only thing he demanded was you come to the ballpark ready to play. Mm-hmm. You come to the ballpark ready to play. Now, I know you've heard all the stories and all the shenanigans that players was all into and stuff of that nature. Some of it's true. Some of it's not. Well, most of it's true. Most of it's true. But the one thing that I would say is when they came to the ballpark, you didn't have to worry about people doing their job. People talk about chemistry. That team had great chemistry because we trusted every man to do his job. Every man came to the ballpark ready to do his job. We didn't have to worry about what he was going to do. Was he going to be able to play? I mean, we never had to worry about that. We had to worry about, you know, not beating up the other team. Yeah, because we had some guys that didn't care about, you know, Duke or not. Ray Knight, borderline psycho, by the way, Ray Knight. Borderline.
I heard that. I know, I've never met him, but I heard he was nuts.
Oh, yeah. You know, so we had two guys who were enforcers, for lack of a better term, because other teams, they really did not want, they were, there was a fear of those two guys. They just was a fear. And I think that to have other teams respect you, you have to have a little fear, you know. And I think that we were good enough that it wasn't about whether we're going to beat you or not, it was how bad we were going to beat you. I think that team was just, you will never have a team like that again. Number one, I don't think that the social consciousness will allow you to have a team like that again. It's never going to allow you to have a team. You're never going to put a team like that together again. No, never going to happen, because people right now, they're looking for talent. Don't get me wrong. They're looking for talent, but they're also looking for that. Pardon my expression, because I hate it, but this is, they're looking for that choir boy.
Yeah. No, and the controversy, right?
Too
much controversy.
Yeah, you know, with great teams always come controversy. Think of all the great teams, no matter what sport. There's always some controversy in there. And it's all because players are not afraid to be themselves. You know, though for better or for worse, this is who you are. You know, and I'm not saying that that's a good thing, but it's something that worked for the 86 team. You know, we had some characters on that team, man. And you know, I don't have to tell you,
there's about
four books written. Yeah, four books written about that team.
You know. It was, you know, even as I was in the middle of it, of playing, you know, and then I got traded, you know, from the Yanks to the Pirates. So then played against you guys in 88, you guys beat us out in 88.
Yeah.
To go to the postseason. But what I was kind of in awe of just all the characters, you know what I mean? I hadn't ever seen that in my young baseball life, to see the diversity of cultures and characters. Yeah. I mean, it was Latin, black, white, you know, it was it all, man. And it was a true melting pot of characters that I think the only other team that I could say that kind of maybe was the 77-78 Yanks. You know what I mean? That were in that mix. But I don't think they had some of the other controversies that you guys had. Yeah. You know,
I think when you talk about that, I think the team that I admired over the years, and because of their carefree personalities, was the Pittsburgh Pirates, man.
Well, right. We're a family.
I became really good friends with Willie Stargell over the years. And Dave Parker and all those guys.
Randy Stennett. That was a great team.
There were some freewheeling guys over there.
There was. John Candelaria. Holy cow, there was, man. There was some freaks on that team, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. So, you know, but like I said, you know, success comes along, you know, you got to have a little controversy, because you're going to have personalities that people are going to like and some people are not going to like. So, yeah, that's the way it goes.
You got to have one story for us. You know, I told you there's the No Way Jose, and I'm assuming, it might be from some other year, but give us a memorable on or off the field story that you can remember that, you know, you could keep quasi clean and tell us something that you might stand up that maybe hasn't been told. That would be great if it hasn't been told, that you're still saving for another book.
No, the one thing, you know, the one thing I will never do is write a tell-all
kind of.
That's never gonna happen.
No, amen.
Yeah, man. I know, y'all. But I say that to say this, that there are a lot of things that happened in that deck.
That happened that you can think of. Too many are coming through your head right now.
Yeah, man.
Try to fish one.
The thing is, trying to think of which one is appropriate for public consumption.
I'm telling you right now, anything with Kevin Mitchell probably would be funny.
You know, but you know, we were a really wild team, but they were very serious. And how serious we were. Well, matter of fact, this happened. We were playing on the Pirates.
Okay.
And Bill Robinson was the first base coach. But of course, you know he was an ex-Pirate.
Great hitter.
And the pitcher was it Roden?
Rick Roden. Yeah.
Rick Roden.
I played with Rick with the Yankees.
He played Rick Roden. And we were playing and Roden was doing pretty good. You know, he was dealing. You know how he
said he was crafty. He was crafty. He kind of sink his slider.
Yeah, good stuff. And we were sitting there and all of a sudden we hear, "Hey, Brett Keaton up there." So we're looking at Bill Robinson yelling at Roden, "Brett Keaton." You know, so we said, "What is Bill talking about? Who's quit cheating?" Well, next thing you know, it went, nothing led to another. And we get in this big, big brawl. It's a brawl. And Rick and Bill, they going at it. And on the side, Kevin Mitchell has this guy around the neck. And he is about to kill him. The man's eyes is already rolled in the back of his head. So everybody's trying to break the fight. We're trying to take Kevin off this kid, you know, because he's going to kill him. He's literally going to kill this kid. You know, so I don't know what possessed this kid to go to Kevin Mitchell.
To go up after Kevin Mitchell.
Of all people, why would you mess with Kevin Mitchell? And I want to say the kid, Khalifa?
Sammy Khalifa. No way. It was Sammy Khalifa. That's my boy, man. Yes, and actually Sammy would do something like that because he was kind of a little bit deranged himself, but he could not keep up with Kevin Mitchell.
No, not Kevin Mitchell. You know, that's the one thing. We've had a lot of fights, but that's the one fight
that
the coach started that we couldn't see that. If it had anybody, if it had been a player, we said, okay, it's just us being us.
Right.
My God. But the coach, and you know, Bill Robinson was the nicest man you ever wanted to meet. I mean,
he really is. Super guy. He was, yeah.
Super guy, you know.
My gosh. And, That is funny. Yeah, no, you got to stay out of Mitch, man.
I say that because I didn't want to tell the story of the guy jumping out the hotel window and stuff. I didn't want to tell that one.
I like that one, though. That one was good.
That is great. Yeah, hey, I like it. That's a good lesson for people that get a little too aggressive.
Make sure you
look at your opponent.
Make sure
and check yourself. Yeah. Okay. Don't be careful, man. At anyone.
Yeah.
As we heard
a football player just recently say, "Stay in your lane, jabroni."
Stay in your lane. Yeah, stay in your lane, man. Stay in your lane. Oh, God.
Scotty B, this man right here stayed in his lane, and that lane was scoring a lot of runs and being productive. I started by saying he's a legendary New York player, man, from South Carolina.
Hell yeah.
Thank you for being on the show.
He stayed in his lane. He just couldn't catch him because he was too damn fast.
I know what. We'll end with this though. I know what to challenge him with, which to run a mile. I'm gonna challenge him one day.
You can have that.
Because he said you can have that.
You can have that, man. I'll run all the sprints you want, but I ain't running a mile for nobody.
You got me in sprints. You got me in sprints the day I die, dog.
I love it. Yeah,
you do, man. No way.
That's Mookie was great catching up.
God bless you, man.
Really good. We appreciate you.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Be good.
Yeah, man. Hey, thank you, man. But let me say this, and this is for all the my alumni brothers and me stuff in the game for years. Find something. You have to redefine yourself. You know, redefine who you are, because there's another you that's there. But you can't be afraid to try different things. And I think that's why I've been. I haven't been afraid to try things. Some things that failed, no question about it. But hey, you got to give yourself a shot, and you can't live the glory days all over again. That's not gonna happen, man. So end your game. But hey, do something positive.
Those are great words, man. Great words, Mook. That's important to a lot of our alumni.
Good times with Mookie Wilson. Oh, I mean, this is somebody who saw a lot in his time, mostly in the 80s in baseball. And then you even go back to the earlier parts of his career in college. You think you're about to go somewhere and the program's gone.
Yeah, right. He was going to go to, the all-black school in South Carolina and in his hometown. And then that went away, and imagine that happening and you being such a prominent baseball player in the year. It's kind of basically that's why you're going, along with obviously being a student athlete. And then all of a sudden, he goes to what ends up being really a storied program over the years. It's been the South Carolina Gamecocks baseball and becomes the first black player there. I'm fascinated by all of that because that was all taking place in the 70s, right? And Mookie had to travail through what ended up thankfully being, the transitional period of the 60s and early 70s into, a more understanding and open arm scenario for black athletes in the United States and worldwide. So we started seeing, I was in a part of that too, as I was coming up in the mid 80s, and things like that to see and not really as heavy feel the pressures that Orestes Mini Meñoso and other black players felt before Mookie, before myself, but you still, Mookie's a little older than I and had to travail through all that. I was very impressed how he handled himself and then ended up being, such a stellar player. The other thing that caught me just crazy was I was expecting to talk about, because he was so fast, Scotty, but he goes, I hated running. He goes, if I didn't have to run and practice and stuff, he goes, I just ran in the game. I found that kind of interesting that he goes, I didn't like to run.
Like I thought that was hilarious.
For exercise.
Yeah. Running with a purpose. It could be a motto for Mookie Wilson. Running with a purpose.
Running with a purpose. Yeah, that was good. Yeah.
Hey, well, for this week in baseball, we're going to keep it Mets. March 21st, 2013, the Mets named David Wright team captain, fourth team captain in franchise history, first since John Franco, who had last played for the team almost a decade ago in 2004. I just thought that was timely to bring up too, as we're going to get the season going pretty soon. And Aaron Judge is the new official captain of the New York Yankees, even though it's felt like he's been the captain at least for the last couple of years. My thing is, I mean, it's something, it's a title. It's cool. I guess with baseball, you don't just throw it out to everyone like you do in hockey. I mean that in, there's always a captain on every hockey team. That's very much not the case in baseball. I would like to see more of it. If we're making it a thing, I'd like to see a few more teams have a captain. And there's not enough time for us to go over all this, but we could go team by team and come up with some captains, like a Joey Votto.
Undoubtedly.
That's been in the team for a long time, right? Or Altuve.
Or even a young guy that's been, if you have a young team like the Rays that are a very young team, because you're not going to bring in a veteran pitcher or everyday player that hasn't been with the squad too long and just put a C on him, right? But there's, there's some thought to that. I have to agree with you. I think that having a captain kind of brings greater camaraderie, greater discipline, and greater structure. Having gone through, you know, the major leagues, you know, minors, majors, Japan leagues, they, you know, that's the one thing that I really commend about them. One of many. Let me retrace that, because there's so many things that I loved about. But one of the key things was how what the structure and hierarchy, respect factor, even if there was some Ken Griffey Jr. 19-year-old, you know what I mean? Which we had some of those that came up and just were phenomenal. There has to be a reverence. And David Wright coming in, by the way, that was only the fourth. Think about it. You know, in the Mets lore, talking about the great Mets lore, Mookie Wilson, and obviously the greats of yesteryear, including Seaver and you name it, they only had four captains, man. Since what? They came into place in the year I was born, I believe, 1962. And, you know, that's impressive that David Wright was thought of to that degree. And we have to agree almost the same way that you said that, yeah, it pretty much was the case with the year or two before that already with David Wright. It's the same case with Aaron Boone, right? And Aaron Judge, excuse me. That it was meant to be, you know, and those guys, had it not be for you know, unfortunately for David Wright, you know, had the back problems that ended up coming shortly thereafter, curtailing his career. He was a incredible leader, you know, on the field, and what a wonderful kid. And man, you know, he was off the field, got to know him a little bit. In fact, one of his main infield instructors that anytime he sees me, he mentions, who recently passed away, Chico Fernandez, as mentor defensively, you know, told me, man, one of the better third basemen that he worked with. So that was pretty cool that they did that.
Agreed. Yeah, and for Aaron, I mean, it was almost like a part of the contract negotiation. Hey, here's the contract, and you're going to be captain of the most historic franchise.
I hadn't really thought of it that way. You know,
that's how they got a discount. I mean, I've joked around about it in the last few weeks.
You think so?
Well, they got a massive discount. The San Diego Padres offered him $15 million.
True.
$15 million. And the taxes between New York City and California are somewhat close. So, like,
So, the 390.
So, yeah. I mean, he's taking much less money to be a New York Yankee, which I think is kind of funny. And at one point, I mean, that's how he got the Yankees up a year. He got them up from 8 years to nine because he told the Steinbrenners, hey, the Padres are offering me about 12 for 15, and you're about 100+ mil behind them. Let's fix that. And they did a little. They gave him one extra year there. So
right.
He's fine. I'm just saying
he's super fine. And remember,
doesn't hurt.
Remember, there is something to be said, and that's for another time. Maybe that we'll dive into that with the right, you know, Legends Lounge guest. But there is something to be said about staying in one major city like New York is, or LA or Chicago or Boston, for that tenure of time. So you get to build that, you know, Jeter-esque, Ripken-esque, you know, Big Poppy. Well, even Big Poppy came from Minnesota. So, but you know what I'm saying? And then number two, you know, there's a lot of money that he can make in New York and nationwide, obviously, but by staying there. Not to say he couldn't in San Diego, but it's not LA. I don't know.
Nope, I'm with you. It was a wild ride during the off season. So can't wait to get the season started.
Happy for the captains, though.
Yes. happy for the captain. And happy for us to be done this week. See you next week.
The Legends Lounge Podcast is brought to you by Major League Alumni Marketing. Hit us with questions or comments at legendslounge@mlbpaa.com. Check out our memorabilia at mlamauthentics.com. Later, Legends.